Access number 27268, Mr. Dennis Reel, Reed, Reel 8. Now, you were going to Singapore, so what's the next thing you remember? Or what happened?
You see, I've got to emphasise one thing. I mean, I was just a member of the ship's company. There's only, I would say, a very, very limited people aboard that ship that knew what we were doing or where we were going.
I understand that. I do understand. It's more what happened to you. What do you remember of things changing or how things were?
Well, all I clearly remember was, thank Christ, we're out of all that cold, horrible, wet weather. We then changed into KSD, khaki service drill, shorts.
Now, what was that like? How did that compare with your normal uniform?
Well, let's put it this way. You've been wearing long trousers for a long, long while. And the sun, well, you know what the sun's been like here in the last couple of days or so. And then you go into shorts. It speaks for itself, you see. And that was our dress of the day. You still maintain the keyboard centering and the court of the gangway. I know it sounds dark, court of the gangway, to stop people going on the ship, off the ship. But court of the gangway. And that's it. Most of the time was taken up with gun drill.
This was getting practice. Ready to fight, obviously.
Well, yeah. I mean, when I say gun drill, it then got competition between the Matlows and the Marines, you know, who was the quickest, you know.
Was that between the bit? Are we talking about the 15-inch turrets here, or are we talking about the 6-inch?
Well, we done the drill on the 15-inch. But there's very, very little you can do to speed up the 15-inch. Because, as I did explain earlier on, I mean, I was the hoist person that brought the hoist up. Well, no way could I speed that up. That came up at its own speed. Now, what it was the loading, unloading of the 4-inch and the 6-inch. That was the main job. I don't know how far we were towards Singapore. I don't know. I only know that all of a sudden, if you can imagine it, we done an about turn and we came this way, the way we just come.
So you never got to Singapore?
We never got to Singapore as such, no. I have since learned that we were very, very lucky. Because that is when the Prince of Wales and Repulse went down, wasn't it? Out that way, and we were only so near to trouble, put it that way.
So what happened next? Where did you go next?
Well, you see, I bypassed the fact that when we came east, we called in at Durban, Cape Town, Joburg, which is South Africa, as you know. See, we stayed there for a while. And then, believe it or not, we were then, in a manner of speaking, doing convoys prior to going to Singapore. Prior to that, we were doing, I don't know whether you're acquainted with that part of the world, but say from Durban or Cape Town up to Mombasa, Mombasa to Colombo, then down to either Durban or Cape Town again, stayed there for a little while, and then we went Mombasa, Ceylon, or Sri Lanka, Colombo, Trincomalee, and we were operating in the Indian Ocean. What we were doing, I haven't a clue. I just don't know what we were doing. Alright, we went ashore in Cape Town and Durban. That is where we met the lady in white. You've heard of her, no doubt. We saw and heard her. I had in Durban, I had a up homers. You must have heard that expression before.
No, I haven't, sorry.
Oh, I thought up homers means from the civilians ashore, there were people there that volunteered their hospitality to any of us that wanted to take advantage of it. Now, there was two of us. We were real, you know, oppos. There was two of us. And there was a family there by the name of Dunlop. And they had a beautiful house in the Valley of a Thousand Hills, which is north of Durban. I'm not going to say, yes, there was a thousand hills in that big valley. I don't know. There was a hell of a lot, I'll tell you that. Now, he invited us to his house to spend whatever time we wanted to. Now, we went there twice. The first occasion was for a weekend, and we were in our nice khaki service drill, which is long trousers, highly polished boots, a jacket, and the red and white hat. We had a very pleasant weekend there, a Saturday there, entertained by him, you know. Very, very nice people they were, elderly, retired. And we stayed there nattering and talking, I think to, oh, I don't know, way, way past 10, or past 10, something like that. We then went to our room, single room, individual rooms, stripped off, okay. Woke up in the morning, got up, and what did I see? At the foot of my bed, on like a nice hanging stand, was my uniform, which had been washed, ironed and pressed, and there it was, there. I thought, well, it wasn't like that when I took it off. Now what it was, he had a little boy there. And he lived at the bottom of their, if I say garden, hell of a big garden, a little hut. And he lived in there. And his job was, once we'd gone to bed, to have collected all the clothes. He then dobied them, and then dried them, washed and ironed them. That is the type of people they were in Durban. There was a club there, run by the ladies of South Africa, very similar to South Salvation Army, and whatever you wanted in that club cost a penny, an English penny. So if you wanted egg and chips, that would cost you tuppence. It was basically like the Salvation Army, you know. The only thing that troubled me was, I never have agreed with it, I never will agree with apartheid. And that was when you're walking along the street, just two of you, and there's some coloured people coming towards you, they would automatically go into the road. I mean, all right, whether it was good or bad, I wouldn't like to say. But I never agreed with that. So that's another story. That's a personal story. Cape Town was the same. Joburg. After a while, I don't know how long we were there. Long enough to learn to like the place. Then we heard the buzz. You know what the expression the buzz is? The rumour. That we were going home. Now, we had, as that parchment would tell you, we had been out for a little while, you know, away from the country, which makes me smile when I read the papers about these women scream like Mary Hill when their husbands have been away for 2 or 3 months. Anyway, but now you see, we then called into prior to going. We called it the Maldives, the Seychelles. I think it was the Seychelles Islands. We called there, but now you see, you're leading me up to America.
Is that the next big thing you remember?
That is quite a story.
Well, tell us about that. Is that where you went next?
Yeah, we went to Philly. But we didn't know we were going to Philadelphia. And no one would tell us. The captain knew, obviously, and the commander knew, and I'm thinking the navigator knew, you know, but the peasants, we didn't know. Until we were a little way off Bermuda. Now that took some little while to get to Bermuda, but we were a little way off Bermuda, and we had a cinema aboard, and they fixed it up on the forecastle. And we all sat down on our wherever you could sit. And then they showed a film. The captain was there in the front there. He had a nice seat all to himself. And they showed us a film. And the film was, believe it or not, The Philadelphia Story. Whether you saw that film or not, I don't know. But the captain then stood up. He turned round. He said, "Now you know where we're going. Philadelphia." Now, you've never met such a true gentleman as that captain.
Who was he?
Peter Skelton.
Skelton?
Skelton, yeah.
Well, what was so good about him? What do you remember
about him? What was so good about him? Well, I just said he was a gentleman. There was no side to him. I mean, when you're at sea, he'd be in his after cabin down below. And wherever you may be, if I was corporal of the gangway, I'd be standing around there. He'd come up. If I was guns crew, he'd come up, you know, go past you. And he had a bucket, a little bucket. And he'd say, "Good evening, corporal," or "Good evening, royal." Because they never called you a marine aboard the ship. You was always known as royal. And that little bucket was for one purpose. He suffered seasickness. He'd go up to his quarters on the bridge, and he'd be as sick as a dog. And that is it. No more. But he wasn't too proud to talk to you. He even stood and stand and talk to you, you know what I mean? Which is unusual for an officer. As I say, he was a perfect gentleman, and everybody got on well with him. He got made an admiral later on, not in my time. He got made an admiral because I read about it, and unfortunately, subsequently, he died. But, no, you couldn't beat him. You couldn't beat him.
Now, what happened next then? So you got to Philadelphia, basically. Yeah. What happened there?
Quite a lot. We steamed up the Delaware. That is the River Delaware. Now, if you can imagine the river, it would be like the Thames. And if you can imagine a whacking great big Royal Naval battleship steaming up there. It was very impressive to the people that we passed. Because once again, the captain, he was as proud of his boat as I was of the Corps. And he flew as many ensigns as possible. You know, from the masthead, the white ensign. And we arrived in Philadelphia Navy Yard. And we arrived about 6:30-ish in the morning. And it was light. Now, it was the custom of quite a few men, crew, to sleep on the shelter deck. I don't know whether I pointed out the shelter deck on the model, but we used to sling up on the shelter deck because why? It was nice and fresh, airy, wasn't hot, it wasn't cold, right? But the only drawback was the majority of them was very nearly stripped off, and of course, when we came alongside the jetty there, helped by the tugs pushing us against the wall, alongside us steamed the local ferry. And of course, everybody on the ferry never seen a British battleship before. They were all on that side. And of course, then what happened then? The Royal Marine bugler sounded reveille, which meant you had to get out your hammock as quick as you could And bear in mind, 50% were stark naked, I mean, nothing wear, which caused a certain amount of amusement. Anyway, well, that was it. But we landed there. What were we there for? We didn't know. We soon found out, though. What they'd done briefly, now try to imagine this. You got all the superstructure of the boat on the main deck. And what they'd done, they cut away about 3 inches, slightly more. If that was your main deck, you had the bulkheads, and they cut away 3 inches right the way through the ship. So if you wanted to, you could lay down on the quarter deck and you could look right forward to the forecastle. They cut it away. Basically, why they done that was because they then slid in armoured deck, 3 inches thick, solid steel. They slid that along. And then they re-welded the lot. I mean, that took me about 2 or 3 minutes to explain that, but that took about 4 or 5 months to do, as you can imagine. But there was, I don't know whether I should tell you, if you are.
We want to know what happened to you. But were you living aboard or were you ashore in barracks?
Oh, no, living aboard. Because I may as well say what they done, they split the detachment. I don't know about the Matlows, but they split the detachment down and they sent a C&M party, that's care and maintenance. The remainder they sent home to Liverpool. And we stayed aboard. Oh no, we stayed aboard. But what I will tell you before we seize up, we still had our rum issue. Now I want you to bear with me with this. We had our rum issue. And we had all the American dockyard maters aboard. We got on very, very well with them except one obnoxious, big-headed person. And he was working near us, near our barracks, and seven bells once again, up spirits, and we had the rum. And he started taking the mickey, because can you imagine a 2-in-1 tot looked like Coca-Cola? And he started taking the mickey, or anybody can drink that. So I said, oh, fair enough. So we had a little huddle, we got together, and we said, we'll teach him a lesson. So what we done, apart from very nearly killing him, what we done, we invited him to have a tot, sippers, the following day. That went on for 2 or 3 days. It then developed into gulpers for 2 or 3 days. And then he boasted. He was very arrogant, typical American, I would say. He got very arrogant about it, boasting to his mates. I told you there's nothing in it. But then what we done, we got round the sergeants, senior NCOs, and they are entitled to neat rum. And we asked them, would they be so kind and generous to give us a tot of neat rum? Well, when we explained it all, they was only too happy. They gave us the equivalent of a 2-in-1 neat rum. The following day, we said to this doctor, I don't know his name, that's immaterial anyway. Oh, yeah, here's your tot, Charlie, we're calling him Charlie. Here's your tot, Charlie. Oh, there's only one condition, it's got to go down in one. That's no problem. Gave him the glass. He said, oh, and he downed it in one. Well, if you can imagine a man that stands there, stares at you, his eyes dilated, and I don't know what he said, and all of a sudden he went, pump, flat on the deck, out. When I say it very nearly killed him, we were told afterwards that if he'd have suffered with any complaint, it could have done, but it cured him. We never saw him again. He never came near the mess. We ascertained that he never came down purposely because he was so embarrassed, ashamed, and belittled. But it taught him a lesson. Now, that is one bad side. The other side, finally, is what I would like to say. Now, I'm a great believer and with the Salvation Army. Now, my mother had a sister. I never met her. I've always known her as Aunt Lottie, and she lived in Detroit. That's all I knew. Now, you know as well as I do, during the war, you couldn't converse or write letters and everything else. So I couldn't write home to Mum and say, "Hey, Mum, I'm in America, send me Aunt Lottie's address." So what I done, I got in touch with the Salvation Army, the American branch, and I explained the position to them, and they said, "Right, what is the name of your aunt?" I said, "Jolliffe." "Do you know her maiden name?" I said, "Turney." "She's married?" I said, "Yes, she's married a Canadian soldier." I said, "All I know is that she lives somewhere near Detroit in a little place called Grosse Isle." Right. And they asked, you know, how old would she be and all that business. What was her relation? I told her an aunt. And leave it with us. Now, when I tell you, I was on duty on the quarterdeck, corporal of the gangway again, and a person come up the gangway in uniform, Salvation Army uniform, and I asked him, you know, what he wanted in as many words, and he said, "Well, I would like to see a Royal Marine, I believe it's a corporal, Reed." I said, "Well, you had that pleasure." I said, "I'm him." He said, "Well," he said, "you, it is my pleasure to say that your aunt lives on such and such an address in Grosse Isle. Her telephone number is what it is." And that was within 24 hours that they had got that information. Don't ask me how they done it. And they had found out where she lived when she went to the States in 1920. Yeah, she went to America, I think, in 1920 or thereabouts. And they found out all that, her phone number, telephone number, and you name it. And I've always held them in my esteem, you know, donate and all that business. You know.
Did you manage to get in touch with your auntie?
I most certainly did. I went ashore. I phoned her up. And I said, "This is me," just like that. I said, "This is Dennis." And she went over the moon. And then I arranged some leave, and which is another story completely. Oh, yes, I met her. Yeah.
Went there. On the leave.
Are we still on this thing? Well, I arranged with my oppo on Ainsbury. I arranged with my aunt that if I got some leave, could I come and spend it with you? By all means. I saw old Percy Parker, the Sergeant Major, and whatchamacallit, I said, I'll explain it to him, can I have a bit of leave? He said, "How much do you want?" I said, "Not too much. I haven't got too much money." So he gave me, I think it was 10 days leave. We then found out where the hell Grosse Isle, Detroit was. We both packed our little bags, went ashore, went to the central station, and booked up, walked up to the bloke there and said, "I want a return ticket to Grosse Island." The bloke behind the counter looked at me and he said, "Where?" I said, "Grosse Island. I want a return ticket." And he obviously realised I was an Englishman. He said, "Well, first and foremost, you don't get a return ticket. I forget what they call it now when you get a return ticket. You want to go to Grosse Isle?" I said, "Well, if that's the same as Grosse Island, that's where I want to go." So we jumped on the train and we went to Chicago, Detroit. Quite a long ride. Met her. But prior to meeting her, we had to stop over at Pittsburgh. And are we still on this? Stopped over at Pittsburgh. And we went off the train onto the platform to stretch our legs. And over on the other platform was a hell of a lot of people, mainly women. And they started looking at us. And then there was murmurs and one or two shouts. And then the conductor of the train came up to us. She said, if you want to take my advice, get back aboard the train. So I said, why? Well, what it was, briefly, what it was, they were departing teenagers that had been called up. And that was their mums and dads and aunts and whatever. And they thought we were German officers because we were all dressed in our blues. We had our nice cap on, you see, and they had the collars that came right up to your throat, and they thought we were German officers. So, I mean, nothing happened there, nothing whatsoever. We arrived in Gross Hill. I phoned my aunt up. She said, where are you? At the time, I thought, that's a bloody silly question. Where am I? I mean, I said, well, I don't know. All I know is we're in a dirty station. Oh, you're in such and such a station, the original one. And we waited and waited for her. She turned up. Bearing in mind, it's the first time I've never seen her before. I was chatting to, I think it was a young girl in the newsagent stall there. I was chatting to her. And Stan Ainsbury, our mate, was chatting to someone else. I turned round, and you could have dropped me stone dead. I'd never seen a likeliest of a person so much like my own mother. Dead sweat. They weren't twins. The dead spit of her. And, but, well, I mean, the first time you see her, you wonder, you know, and of course, after the formal introductions, if one can put it that way, you know, she took her to her house on Gross Hill. And we were, it's only a little, like a little village, actually. And we had a marvellous 10 days there.